Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 15th of June 2014. My name is TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Webcow Girl, Nick from Partially Obstructed View, and Gareth James. We're now going to talk about Hotel, which is a new play by Polly Stenham at the National Theatre. This is being done in the temporary theatre space, which used to be known as a shed. It's directed by Maria Aberg and stars Tom Beard, Hermione Guilford, Tom Rhys-Harries, Shannon Tarbert and Susan Wacoma. Web Cowgirl, tell me what you thought about this play and tell me a little bit more about it.
I wanted to go see this play because although Polly Stenham is actually pretty well known on the London theatre circuit as one of the young promising playwrights, perhaps promising isn't even reasonable to say anymore, I haven't seen anything by her, so I wanted to see this piece. It helped that because it's at the theatre formerly known as The Shed, prices are quite affordable, and also it has a 90-minute running time, which makes me think, you know, you're going to be in and out one way or another. It initially presents itself as a sort of a family drama, and although the play takes a sudden turn into another direction, the family is definitely at the heart of it. There's a mother and father who are on holiday together with their nearly adult children on a deserted island who are sort of attempting to reconcile their relationship after a difficult time. But I found myself more intrigued by the children, a boy who's, I don't know, maybe about 17 or so, and his slightly younger sister that kind of felt like she was about 14. The dynamic between the kids is fascinating and entirely believable. They're sort of competitive, but at the same time, they really look out for each other. And it was one of the nicest brother-sister dynamics I thought I'd ever seen on stage. It was completely believable. And as the play progresses and things get more tense, I found myself getting a bit worried about what was going to happen to them as if they were real people. The brother is extraordinarily handsome because he initially presented on stage with a bathing suit on and covered in water. He was quite attractive, and I became worried that perhaps the relationship between him and his sister was going to be revealed to be something much more unpleasant, but it turns out that was just me, which I was very happy to see. And in fact, the way that he looks out for her was quite amazing. The parents, I thought, weren't quite as well done. Like the children, they also had a sense of competition between them, which I think maybe isn't entirely a good dynamic for a husband and wife. And certainly in the case of this couple, it had really torn them apart. They, as the play progresses, have a chance to sort of demonstrate, you know, also their sense of connection with their children, but I didn't entirely buy into their characters. However, the problems between them as a married couple were drawn very well, and I love how Polly Stenham pulled the elements of modern social media into it so that the crisis in the relationship was, in fact, precipitated in part by stuff that people said or did on the internet. And to me, it made the play seem very, very on edge and very relevant. But I'm not entirely sure what to say about the rest of the play. But to me, I feel that it's reasonable to say that if you've got problems with seeing violence on stage, that something does happen that's very, very troubling, possibly a couple of things. And if you've got a weak stomach, this play may be quite upsetting to you. However, because of the play being short, it could have gone even further, and it winds up stopping very abruptly at a sort of a decision point. I thought it was a great place to leave me as an audience member wondering what happened. But Nick, how'd you find it?
Well, for me, I have seen all of Polly Stenham's previous plays, so I definitely agree about the opening. And I mean, the thing from having seen her other plays is that this is definitely where her strengths lie in these sort of twisted family dramas, is that she made her name for herself essentially showing people that kind of surface upper middle class families who look very respectable can be as dysfunctional as anybody else. There was criticism that her first three plays kind of dealt too much with the same area, and this is a departure for her. Again, it's tricky to describe how, because there's a couple of big twists in the story which the National's trying to keep secret, so I don't want to actually give away what happens, but I think it's fair to say that the opening is a bit of a red herring, and actually she's written a political play here. And there's quite an interesting concern she's found that I've not seen explored much elsewhere, which is of a kind of modern-day colonialism. And well, I can say it's in a way a thriller, because that's what it's billed as well. And I think on that front, it works very well. I think Maria Abegg's done a fantastic job directing this, and the tension in sort of the middle section. This is, I seem to have seen a lot of plays lately that are very clearly defined into three distinct sections, and this was one of them. And the middle section, which is kind of the heart of it, has this sort of thriller element that is very effectively done. I don't think, though, that as the political playwriting is going to be Polly Stenham's niche, because the actual issue she's talking about is very clunkily done. It's very preacherly introduced, and there's a real I felt like there was a gear shift between plot and politics. Every single time it went to the character in question, who is the mouthpiece for these political views, which and this character is unfortunately very much a mouthpiece, not really much of a character in her own right. So I think as a piece of political theatre, it's very clumsily written, and I don't think that Stenham's as good at that as she is at really kind of bringing these family dynamics. I mean, the brother-sister dynamics are really something that she's shown a lot of flair for. I still think Tusk is her best play to date. I think it does kind of lose its way once it goes into the first twist of what's really going on. And I think it's a shame. There's a lot of sort of visual references, I think, to Sarah Kane's Blasted, in that it's taking place in this very gleaming white hotel room that is not quite in that state by the end of the play, shall we say. Although I think that it's more of a sort of surface reference rather than trying to emulate that. I think it's more of a nod in Sarah Kane's direction. But I think it's very well performed and very well directed and very well designed as well. But I think, and again, this is something else I think I'll be saying a lot this week, is that the production, I think, is a lot better than the play.
Well, let me ask you this question. I was speaking with someone right after the play who felt that it was just half a play and that there was a whole other play that needed to take place after where it finished. Did you feel it ended at the right place? Did you feel this was sort of a prequel of a bigger work? Or do you think it stands where it is and that's the right place for it?
I did find it about two-thirds of a play, rather than half a play. I mean, it does resolve, but there are things that don't get resolved. She is very much more interested in the troubled young man. I mean, a lot of the plays are troubled. Often what you get is a rather nice brother and sister dynamic, and then she starts focusing on the troubled young man a lot, and she likes her troubled young men. She likes her troubled young boys, it seems, and this is just as much, you know, that kind of trouble. They've had a problem for me with Shannon Tarbert sort of kind of disappearing, literally disappearing in one case during the play, because she's an actress I like a lot. I did think that she, Polly Stenham's rather more interested in the Tom Rees Harris character. I did have also had a slight problem. I mean, I don't think we've really mentioned yet that the mother of the family is, of course, a politician, and she's a disgraced politician who's had to resign because of something her husband's done. And the thing about that is that when we come into the political stuff and the thriller element and this argument of the things to do with what we're saying is the remnants of colonialism and the problems of international aid, which are in that sort of the thriller section of the play, I just thought, well, yeah, I mean, okay. There is gunplay here, but a politician perhaps would have a better answer than the mother has to this thing. I always felt that it was that kind of teenage anger that you get. You find out about an issue and you want to shout it about it, and you can say, how can you do this? How can you do this? And there's nobody who says, well, actually, it's not as simple as that. And you just wish that Polly Stenham had actually talked to somebody, even if she just talked to somebody like Claire Short, who she's not going to get some kind of Tory mumbo jumbo, it's all okay and it's all in your imagination, little girl. She would have got a much more reasoned argument about the problems of international aid. And she's found out about this particular story, although, you know, it's something that rumbles away, and has got interested in this particular issue and has got angry about it and has tried to sort of put it to the forefront, but hasn't really. I mean, I don't know that you have to have balance, but it helps if you've at least gone a few steps in the other direction just to try to empathise. Because if you don't do that, then you don't you sort of don't get a fullness of character, and it is a problem that too many of the characters drop away, and you're left again with, in the end, really with the troubled boy and his nearly invisible sister. And yeah, it was disappointing, and you wanted more, because you wanted to know more about a lot of the characters. You wanted to know more about the mouthpiece for the anti-colonialism, more about who she was and how she got to where she was. You wanted to know more about what happens to the family in the end. It doesn't need to, you know, it doesn't need to finish. It was a decent place to finish, but I think it needed more fullness in there. There was a sort of, as I say, a third missing in the play.
I think this is the thing with where it finishes. It is an abrupt ending, but I wasn't sitting there thinking, oh, I wanted it to go on. What I was wishing for was that it had been rewritten quite significantly before it got to that stage. And I think you're onto something there with a lack of kind of any sort of alternative view is part of what makes it feel very preachy. So it feels like a shame to me, because there's stuff in there that could have worked, but the overall picture that ends up on stage isn't really particularly successful to me.
Well, as it turns out, I actually really enjoyed having to walk out and answer my own questions about what happens after. But I do agree the political stuff isn't handled as if it's really from a character. It's, here's a bunch of stuff I read in the newspaper, it got me really angry. On the other hand, I've never seen a play that's even attempted to deal with these kind of difficult political machinations. It's the sort of stuff that you wind up just reading about in the business section of the newspaper, even though it really affects people. And I give the playwright credit for actually making this kind of situation something that we have to think about, rather than just looking at and doing the math and seeing what that's really all about. So I was happy with where it stopped, and just consider this, if it hadn't stopped where it did, we might have got another half hour of lecturing.
We're now going to talk about In the Vale of Health, which is a collection of four plays by Simon Gray, which has been on downstairs at the Hampstead Theatre and moved up for a couple of weeks to the upstairs space. And it's really a continuation of a play he wrote in 2001 called Japes. This was done at the Theatre Royal Haymarket, starring Jasper Britton, Toby Stevens and Claire Swinburne, and concerned a couple of literary brothers and a triangular relationship with the wife of one, who is, of course, the mistress of another. And it takes you through about 20 years of their life together and apart, and the difficulties that especially the character of Japes has. He's the rather wayward brother to a rather successful novelist called Michael, and Michael's wife is the object of Japes's attention, and it's a very intense relationship they have. And the final scene of the original Japes has the daughter of, well, we're not sure whose daughter it is, given this, but it is certainly the daughter of the mother, coming back and challenging one of the characters about their sort of history together, and the way that the whole family dynamic, the whole rather strange relationship worked. Simon Gray seems to have been rather fascinated by this play. I mean, I have to say, when I saw it, I thought it was, you know, an okay play. It's a well-made play. I think I went to a rather quiet midweek matinee of the play at the Theatre Royal Haymarket, so it wasn't exactly full, but it's a, you know, it's a decently made play and very well performed there. And it is actually, I think, very well performed here by a cast which is Geffen Anthony, Jamie Ballard, Laura Rees and Imogen Dole. Imogen Dole playing the daughter instead of having Laura Rees coming back as the daughter. I thought this is very well played. But what has happened here is Simon Gray really must have mulled this play over a lot and started writing additional bits. He wrote a partial rewrite, which here is presented as Michael, a sort of almost complete rewrite of the original Japes play with a different ending, which is here called Japes 2. And then he did an interstitial play, bits that aren't in Japes that are backstage bits which are mentioned in the Japes play, which is here called The Missing Pages. And this has been presented rather ambitiously, and I do mean that in its negative sense as well as its positive sense, by the Hampstead Theatre. Was presented downstairs and moved upstairs. I think it was fairly well attended and people were very interested in it, but I think that that's the kind of the problem with Simon Gray. He is a playwright who people respect, but not necessarily one that is very popular. Everybody respects him as a writer, but they don't really find him popular. One of the things I always wonder why I like Simon Gray, because I do like Simon Gray's plays, and I think it really stems from seeing a rather special production of The Common Pursuit in the late 80s, which involved Stephen Fry and John Gordon Sinclair and the late Rick Mail, and also a rather wonderful television play called They Never Slept, which people have to see because it has Edward Fox doing the greatest Edward Fox impression you've ever seen. Nick, tell me what you thought about In the Vale of Hell.
Well, I mean, my feeling on this is it's, you know, you described it as the publicity does, as a collection of four plays. I would personally describe it as a collection of one play done four times. And I don't particularly think that the blame can really be laid at Simon Gray's feet. I think it's interesting that this was never done in this way during his lifetime, and I can't help wondering if one of the reasons is that he wouldn't have approved of it, because I don't think for a minute that these were actually written to be performed as a quartet. There are differences between them, but there's much more that is not just similar but identical between them. I mean, it is repetition of a lot of the same scenes over and over. I saw them spread out over about a month, 6 weeks, because I saw the first three when they were downstairs, and I couldn't get to Missing Dates when it was downstairs, so I saw that one when it moved upstairs. And I think even seeing it with kind of a couple of weeks between each performance, it's very hard to pick apart what the differences here are. So it really feels like you're sitting... Certainly the basic story you're watching is the same. I think Michael is essentially the second act of Japes, but with a different final scene. But the first scene of it is pretty much exactly the same. Or actually, is it the last scene that's the same and the scene before it that's different? This is the thing, you see, the differences between them are there's usually one scene, once you've seen a couple of them, there's one scene of it that you haven't seen before. And I actually ended up feeling quite bad for the actors, because they are doing very, well, not very different, but they are giving different performances in each one. They are showing some distinction, which must be incredibly hard when the scripts are almost identical. The set is kind of moved around between each play, and I'm convinced that one of the reasons for that is just for the actors to not accidentally go off on the wrong play halfway through, because they're doing just chunks of like 20 minutes at a time that are identical to another play. So I think one of the reasons for moving things around is to remind us which play we're in and the actors. And it's kind of surely a huge task to ask them to memorize these tiny little differences in dialogue and in performance for something that ultimately has very little impact on an audience. You can see just about enough to see that it is different, but nowhere near enough to care And it's just an incredibly, it's really boring after a while. It's not really the greatest Simon Gray play. And I think it's been marketed kind of as something that it's not. I think a lot of people would infer from the marketing that it's kind of Simon Gray's version of the Norman Conquest, you know, that there's something really different to be taken from each version. And I don't think there is. I think they're essentially different drafts, and it becomes incredibly frustrating. There's certain sort of set pieces that recur over and over. When I saw Missing Dates, as I say, that was the last one I saw, and it was the evening performance of what had been a four-play day, and that had actually been when they got the critics in. They got them to watch all four plays in a day. And I was actually talking to one of them in the interval, and he said that earlier that day, there's a scene in a few of the plays where the daughter, when she's very young, has gone missing at a fancy dress party. And there's a really kind of lengthy scene of Michael on the phone trying to describe who the little girl he's looking for is, and he kind of goes on and on over not being sure whether she's dressed as a wolf or a fox. And apparently on the press day, somebody shouted out, "She's a fox!" halfway through that, which I think says quite a lot about what the audience feels about it at that point. I just think this is horribly misjudged. I'm tempted to see it as being an incredibly cynical attempt to get people to pay four times to see the same play. You know, I hope it's not. I think it's one of those things where if you become immersed in it, you probably see the differences and the subtleties a lot more easily than if you're actually watching it as an audience. And I think that's the problem. Like I say, Japes was the only one that got a full production in Simon Gray's lifetime. He did these rewrites that kind of turned up as radio productions or rehearsed readings. I think he was doing this largely for his own amusement. And there's this running thing in the plays where Japes and Michael, who are kind of, I mean, this is the other thing, is that, I mean, they're Simon Gray characters. They're not likable people to spend one play's running time with, let alone four. And they're kind of these very smug intellectuals who remember the little poems they used to write as children. And they often have these little discussions over a single word that they changed in one of their poems that made a huge difference. And I think that is what this is. I think that is Simon Gray playing this kind of game with himself of changing a word here and seeing whether he feels that changes the whole meaning of something. But I mean, when you come in and watch a play once and then go and see it, you remember enough about it to be bored by seeing the whole thing again, but you don't remember it in such detail that you spot that one word that's been changed and that makes the world of difference. So I think this is just, for me, it was an absolute disaster and a very tedious collection of plays, even spread out over about 6 weeks. But I think Gareth saw them all in one day, so I'm interested to hear what that was like.
Well, at least I only had to do two tube journeys rather than eight tube journeys. Yes, I saw them all yesterday, in fact, so it's not even 13 hours yet since I walked out of the theatre. I think I have to start by saying that my kind of relationship with Simon Gray is a bit ambivalent, because I actually admire his writing, but I really don't like his plays. And I think the reason for that is I don't like his characters, as you've touched on, really. I mean, they're just not people you can like at all. And I just feel, and I don't identify with the situations he puts them in. And I just find myself, I think I find them a bit cold and cynical for my taste, really, and a bit too intellectual and a bit too sort of up themselves, I suppose. So I guess that begs the question, why on earth did I go and see all four in a day? I suppose it's the sort of, I think they were put over as an event, and I don't think it is an event. I think it's actually something theatre people are doing for theatre people. And I think that's kind of therefore misrepresenting in some way what they were doing. Simon Gray, in the programme note, it does suggest that Simon Gray did have dialogue with various directors and producers over doing the plays in various permutations, and he seems to have liked the idea at one point and not liked the idea at one point. So whether he would have wanted this, I don't know, but he certainly did debate the idea of combinations of the plays. And at one point, I think he talked about doing two of the plays and calling them separate and together. I think it was separately and together. I actually quite like Japes. I actually thought Japes was a sort of, you know, a fairly complete play. And I actually thought that was probably the better experience. And actually, I quite like Missing Dates, the end play, which is basically the beginning of Japes, all the bits that weren't in Japes that were in Michael Made Bigger, and then the ending of Japes 2, but changed a bit. And I think if I'd seen Japes and Missing Dates, I think I'd feel happier than seeing all four, because I found Michael, which is basically, as Tim said, the filler from Japes with the same ending as Japes, completely pointless. And I found Japes 2 too repetitive, because even though it has a different ending, the rest of the play is, to all intents and purposes, the same as Japes. So, you know, there are differences. There's subtle differences. You know, the parents die in different ways, and the children change sex and change names and all sorts of things. But to all intents and purposes, it is Japes, and therefore it is one play that's kind of cut up and put back together in different ways, really. So the part of me that wants entertainment wasn't really entertained by the middle of the day, the two afternoon plays, but was fairly entertained by the beginning and the end of the day. The sort of theatrical nerd in me admired it and in a way kind of looked back on it thinking, well, yeah, all right, interesting, fascinating, perhaps. I think what I admired above all was the actors, really, particularly Gethin Antony and Jamie Ballard, who I thought were just extraordinary, and quite how they remember all of those lines and all of the permutations is beyond me. But I thought, you know, it was, from a performance point of view, particularly with those two, I thought the girls were a touch kind of caricatured. I don't know whether that was them or the characters, but I thought that the performances were outstanding. It also proved that the Hampstead Theatre's main house can work in the round, or rather in the square, perfectly well, because I think, even though it's had different reconfigurations before, it's the first time I think I've seen it exactly like this, and I think it worked very well in that configuration. But I still think it was a misguided theatrical enterprise, really, and I think it'll take me longer before I decide whether I regret going or not. But I think at the end of the day, you know, it was theatre intellectuals probably taking a sort of intellectual writer and playing intellectual games. And I think there are other things that theatres can be doing today that are more important than that.
I think this is part of the thing is, and I think we probably both have quite similar responses to Simon Gray. As you know, I mean, I essentially went because it seemed like an event and because of the cast, rather than because of any particular liking for Simon Gray. And I think there's something that kind of really typifies, I think, this sort of quite aggressive intellectualism of his that's kind of got contempt for anybody who isn't sort of part of this sort of clique that can analyse a word in 10 different ways before breakfast. I mean, we finally see in Missing Dates, we see the son-in-law character, who's very briefly been alluded to elsewhere. I must have never heard an audience so relieved to see a new face than on the Saturday night when Tom Mothersdale walked on stage after, you know, however good the actors might have been spending the whole day with just these three or four actors. So when the fifth turns up, it's quite exciting. But he's kind of the one voice of outside of this family and the one chance to admit and accept in some way that this is really not... That these people really aren't okay. This isn't a healthy way to be going through your life. But I think, unfortunately, the character is portrayed as a bit of a train wreck and a bit of a joke. And, I mean, what you hear about what happens to him afterwards is kind of quite extreme. So I think that's another missed opportunity. He's very good when he's on, but, you know, his performance, as with the others, is very good. And he kind of, I think that's one of the reasons that Missing Dates kind of stands out, is because you've actually got a whole different person to look at for a little while. But again, I think the way the character is treated with a certain amount of contempt is quite indicative of why it's very difficult to care, even the first time around, let alone the fourth time around.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, when he came on after, you know, for me, it was kind of 10 hours after curtain up on the first play and this fifth character turned up. It was a bit like a breath of fresh air, really. I thought, oh, good, someone new. And he acted it very well. And actually, he makes the play funnier than any of the other plays. And part of that funny is obviously at his expense. But I have to say, he made the fourth play for me. And I think if that character hadn't come on, I probably wouldn't have been saying, I wished I'd seen Japes or Japes 2 plus Missing Dates. I think I probably would have said, I wished I'd only gone to one, either Japes or Japes 2. So for me, that was a bit of a bonus, frankly. But I suppose I am kind of clutching at straws, really, after 10 hours, just bringing on one character for a couple of scenes kind of changes my attitude to the day. But I think you're right. I think even though you saw the four separately and I saw them together, I think the reaction's very much the same.
We're now going to talk about Fathers and Sons, which is on at the Donmar Warehouse. This is a play by Brian Friel after the novel by Ivan Turgenev. It has what looks like an extremely interesting cast. Gareth, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
Yes. Brian Friel, of course, has done quite a lot of adaptations in addition to his own writing, and in particular Russian adaptations. So when he did this first about 27 years ago, I mean, I think this might have been one of the first of the sort of the dabbles into adaptations for him. And it was first produced at the National Theatre in a production by Michael Rudman, which I did see, and with a pretty sort of interesting cast at the time, really, because Ray Fiennes was Arkady, who is the son of the family. Robert Glenister was Azarov, who's the son's friend who comes back from university with him. And in one of the other smaller roles, Fenichka, who's the maid come lover come wife of Arkady's dad, was played by Leslie Sharp. And my recollection of the play was that it was okay. I quite enjoyed it. But actually, I really enjoyed this revival an awful lot more. And I think there are probably lots of reasons for that. And the first, I think, is the space. I think the Donmar is an intimate theatre, but on this occasion, it's even more intimate because Rob Howell has created this extraordinary sort of set, which kind of draws you into the space and really does make you feel as if you're sitting there peering into these people's homes and lives. I think Lindsay Turner's direction is impeccable. The show's got a lot more pace than I remember, in that it doesn't seem to have a wasted moment to me, and it moves along at a right old pace. And I think above all else, really, it does have a frankly faultless cast. I thought it was one of the best casts I've seen on the Donmar stage, and boy, have I seen some cast on the Donmar stage. Arkady, who's the kind of focal point with his friend Bazarov, he returns from university in St. Petersburg. They're both nihilists, I think that's how you pronounce it, and Arkady is clearly in awe of his friend, who has great charisma and great presence. And people are affected by Bazarov in different ways, and the uncle and the family retainer absolutely hate him. His dad takes to him, one of the maids, Dunyasha, swoons over him, and clearly Arkady is in awe of him. And then we eventually move to Bazarov's home, where his parents just idolize him. But he can't reciprocate any of these feelings because, you know, he doesn't kind of operate at an emotional level, really. So only one point does he let his guard down, when he professes his love for another character and is rebuffed, and then kind of withdraws into himself, really. So he's a very cold, charismatic but cold kind of presence. And even though Arkady shares his philosophical beliefs, he's nowhere near as cold and hard-hearted, and in its tragic conclusion becomes very, very distressed. And I guess it's really a kind of story of familial love and friendship. It's written with quite a light touch, I think, and I just thought it was lovely. I just thought it was just beautifully done, really. I'd never seen Seth Numrich before. He was here, I think, in Sweet Bird of Youth last year, which I missed, and I thought he was hugely impressive. An American actor, I think, who's done a lot of theatre in America rather than film, which is good. I thought he was great, and I think it's quite hard to play against that. But I think that Joshua James, who plays Arkady, sort of does do that very well, because he is a very contrasting role, and he brings a kind of emotionality and a vulnerability to the role. And there's just lots of other great, great, great performances, really. Anthony Karp, I've never seen Anthony Karp this good, I don't think, as a kind of bumbling, hapless dad, Nikolai. And Tim McMillan, who plays the uncle, is beautifully pompous, and I think it sort of inhabits that role really well. And then you've got two sort of theatre veterans who I've liked for ages, who just here they are coming in with absolutely cracking performances. And that's Carl Johnson, who plays Bazarov's dad, and Susan Engdahl, who plays this extraordinary Princess Olga. So I just really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed sort of every bit of it, really. I enjoyed the performances. I enjoyed the staging. I liked the design. I liked the writing. And it's not the sort of play that I would kind of expect myself to enjoy that much, but I did.
Nick, what did you think?
Yeah, I would pretty much agree with everything there. I mean, it is one of those plays that you do think could be something you wouldn't kind of, that I think might be a kind of Dry's attempt to recreate a Chekhov kind of atmosphere. And obviously it being Russian and set largely in a country estate, there's a feel of that. But I think the pace that Gareth mentioned is, it feels really fresh and it feels really different from any other Russian-based play that I've seen for a long time. There's a lot going on. I suppose, you know, compressing what's probably quite a long novel into a play helps with that. There's a lot of events to get through, and it does feel very, that there's a lot going on. And I also agree, I mean, that it's a very tricky central role for Joshua James, in that he is the central character, but everything, including his own actions, kind of spark off the charisma of Bazarov. And so he has to kind of make an impact against that, and he certainly does. I think it's the kind of role that he's showing himself to be very good at. He's one of these actors who's kind of appeared in the last few years and really started making a name for himself. And I think he's definitely, it's definitely worth him dropping out of the Wolf Hall two-part, because he was in that in Stratford but didn't come with it to London. He did this instead. And I generally don't have much to disagree with there. I think it's surprisingly entertaining. It is moving, and it's a lovely little evening at the theatre.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.